Welcome to Carmen Madrid's podcast. Are you preparing for the Delhi B2 or C1 exam? This podcast is made just for you. Carmen Madrid is an accredited examiner from the Instituto Cervantes and your new tutor for this exam. Each episode features a conversation between two speakers generated using advanced AI technology. These conversations are about a previous episode of a Spanish podcast on the Delhi B2 and C1 exams. But that's not all. We offer a range of services to support your learning journey. One-on-one and group Spanish classes, books for Delhi preparation to help you study effectively, exclusive access to the News Club and Reading Club, plus our advanced grammar workshop to deepen your understanding of Spanish. You can find everything at DelhiExam.com. Join us in taking your Spanish to the next level. I'll leave you with my AI friends. Enjoy.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive.
Mm-hmm.
You know how we do it here.
Mm-hmm.
We take that huge pile of study material you send our way and we pull out the absolute must-know insights.
The real high-leverage stuff.
Exactly. And today, yeah. We are strapping in for what is, I mean, it's really the final boss of the DLE C1 oral exam. We're talking about TOREA 3.
La negociación, the negotiation.
It's the one. So for those of you who are really aiming for that C1 certificate, think of this deep dive as your shortcut. We're going to peel back the layers on this really complex, unscripted interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission today is to figure out what the examiners are really looking for. You know, when they're watching you handle the pressure, the disagreement, all of it. Because when we're done, we need to know exactly how to lock in that massive percentage of your grade.
And just so you know where we're pulling this from, we've synthesized a lot of content related to our English episode 256.
Okay.
But for anyone who'd rather hear the original discussion in Spanish, that's episode 132. You can find it on the DLEExam.com website.
Right. And there's written material there, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Check the About DEA in English section. I mean, it's really critical reading if you're serious about this.
Okay, so let's get right to it. Here's the thing that makes TOREA 3 a real pressure cooker. It is the only task in that entire 20-minute oral test.
The only one.
That you are not allowed to prepare for beforehand. You get your 20 minutes for TOREA 1 and 2, but TOREA 3, you walk in and tackle it cold.
Completely spontaneous. And that's why what you do outside the exam room is everything.
So let's put this in context. Can you just quickly walk us through the structure of the C1 oral test?
Sure. So the whole test is 20 minutes, and it's made up of three main tasks. You've got TOREA 1, which is more of a monologue.
The expression task.
Right. You talk about something you've prepared. Then you have TOREA 2 and TOREA 3, and both of those are interaction tasks.
And I remember reading that before the clock even starts, they ask you some ice-breaking questions.
They do. And the materials are really clear on this. Those questions are just to help you relax.
They don't count for the score. Not at all. It's just a good reminder, you know, to get there a little ahead of the time they give you in the email, just so you have that buffer.
Good tip. Okay, now for the important part, the math, because this is where TOREA 3 really stands out.
It really does. It becomes the main event. So when the examiners are doing their analytical grading, the weighting is, well, it's heavily skewed.
Right.
TOREA 1 gets you 30% of the grade. TOREA 2 gets you another 20%.
So 60% total for the parts you can prepare for.
Exactly. Which leaves TOREA 3, the negotiation weighted, at a colossal 40%.
40%. Wow. That one number tells you everything you need to know about what C1 mastery really is.
It does.
It's not just about having complex grammar. It's about being able to use it fluently, spontaneously.
And natural.
And adapting on the fly to things you didn't see coming.
Hmm.
This is where you prove you have that, you know, that native-like clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So if 40% of your grade is riding on this one interaction, let's talk about the mechanics. What actually happens in TOREA 3?
The sources define it as a formal, sustained conversation.
Yeah.
It's between you and the interviewer, and it's really designed to simulate a real-world scenario where you'd need that high-level Spanish.
And the conversation starts from a visual prompt, right?
Always. You'll get some kind of graphic stimuli. It's usually a laminated sheet with photos, maybe some newspaper headlines, ads, that sort of thing.
And you have to pick one.
They'll show you two options, usually linked by a theme, and you just have to choose one to be the starting point for your discussion.
Okay. And how long does this go on for?
It's pretty intense, just 4 to 6 minutes. And in that time, the objective is, it's multifaceted. You have to exchange ideas, justify your opinions, make assessments.
And negotiate.
And negotiate. That's the key. And critically, you have to work towards some kind of agreement.
And this is where I think a lot of candidates probably make a mistake. Under pressure, you just revert to a simple question and answer format.
Exactly. You think you're just having a chat. But the materials specifically warn against that. There are no, you know, closed speaking turns. It has to be dynamic.
Okay, but 4 to 6 minutes of unscripted debate while someone is grading you? That sounds exhausting. Do the source materials give any, like, psychological tips for staying focused?
They do, but here's where it gets really interesting. The tips are actually embedded in the instructions for the examiner. The interviewers are explicitly told to aim for a fluid conversation. And what that means is it frequently involves overlapping speech and interruptions.
So they're supposed to interrupt you.
Yes. The sources stress that you need to react naturally to it. And this is crucial. You should not be surprised if the examiner takes a completely contrary opinion, even if it sounds a little bit, well, nonsensical.
So the whole point is to test your ability to handle unscripted, resilient interaction.
That's it. So the examiner isn't just grading your Spanish. They're grading your resolve, your ability to keep that conversational ball in the air, even when someone is actively trying to spike it.
That moment of being cut off then,
yeah,
is actually a huge opportunity.
It's your biggest chance to score points in the interaction category. It requires specific C1 tools, you know, phrases to interrupt politely but firmly.
Like what?
Things like, permítame que le interrumpa para aclarar un punto. Or, con todo el respeto, no comparto esa visión. That kind of formal, measured pushback. That's C1 gold.
Let's talk about the setup. So the examiner gives you a minute to read the instructions and the visual prompt. What happens right after that?
The examiner will actually tell you that this is an open conversation. They'll say you're welcome to ask questions, to interrupt, to show disagreement, to argue your points.
To refute what they're saying.
Exactly. You are explicitly given permission to push back. They're basically saying, please challenge me. It is a direct invitation to negotiate.
That is a massive strategic clue. If they're asking you to disagree, you pretty much have to disagree at some point to pass the task.
You do.
And there was a detail about the visual itself, right? What if you don't think the photo is a perfect fit for the task?
Right. This is a great chance to show some higher level thinking. The sources say you, the candidate, can proactively suggest changes you'd make to the stimulus.
So instead of just accepting it, you can analyze it.
Precisely. You can say something like, si tuviéramos que adaptar esta imagen para el objetivo que nos ocupa, yo sugeriría. If we had to adapt this image for our objective, I would suggest. It shows flexibility, problem solving. Both are very high-level C1 skills.
Okay, let's unpack the scorecard. If I survive the interruptions, if I keep the conversation going,
yeah.
What are they actually measuring in those 4 to 6 minutes?
They're looking at 8 criteria at the same time. You have fluency, of course, cohesion, so the logical structure, coherence. Are your points relevant?
The usual suspects. Vocabulary, grammar, pronunciation.
Right. And then fulfillment of the task. But the most important one for this whole conversation is interaction. Active participation, asking and answering questions, keeping the flow going.
And I'm guessing interaction and grammar are totally linked in Theory 3. You can't just state an opinion.
You have to justify it, and you have to use complex language to do it.
So what kind of structures should people be practicing to really nail that justification part?
Well, this is where you have to move beyond the simple present tense. You need some rhetorical sophistication. To justify an opinion, you have to contrast it, hypothesize, show you can concede a point.
Okay, so give me some examples.
Definitely master your concessive clauses. Things like, a pesar de que, despite the fact that, or si bien es cierto que, that's bien es true that. These are vital for acknowledging the examiner's point before you refute it.
Got it. What else?
Conditional clauses. For hypothesizing, si decidiéramos, if we were to decide. And also advanced modal verbs like debería, podríamos, they show nuance.
That definitely turns a simple opinion into a C1 level analysis. Okay, now for the fun part, the examiner's secret weapon. Let's use that official Cervantes model example, donating funds to an NGO.
This is the perfect example. It's like a game of mental chess. So the scenario is, we have 10,000 euros to donate. We have to choose an NGO.
But there's a catch.
There's always a catch. The chosen organization has to meet 3 very specific criteria. 1, it has to give visibility to a little known cause.
Okay.
2, the 10,000 euros has to be a significant amount for that cause. And 3, it has to be relevant to a specific collective.
And you have to keep referencing those 3 things through the whole negotiation.
Constantly.
And the options in the model exam are Amigas del Planeta, art restoration, saving stray cats, and consumer protectors. I choose one, and then the fight begins.
And here's what's fascinating. The examiner is armed. They have a confidential script with aspectos positivos and aspectos negativos for every single one of those options.
So no matter what I pick, they have a pre-written argument against me.
Exactly. Their goal is not to agree with you quickly. It's to test your ability to hold your ground with a coherent argument.
Let's play this out. Say I choose art restoration. I'll argue that it's a little-known cause, that 10,000 euros is significant for one small project, and it targets the collective of local historians.
That's a perfect C1 argument. Now, I'm the examiner. I'd come back with something like, comprendo su punto, pero si bien es cierto que la restauración es importante, ¿no cree usted que Amigos de Planeta con la crisis climática es una causa mucho más relevante para la colectividad general?
Ah, I see what happened. You use the concessive clause, si bien es cierto que, and then you challenge my criteria on relevance to the collective. I have to fight back on that.
You do.
So I might say, entiendo la prioridad de Amigos del Planeta. Sin embargo, nuestro objetivo es apoyar una causa que carece de visibilidad. En el caso hipotético de que donemos a una ONG ecológica, esa suma se perdería. Para nuestro colectivo, un proyecto de restauración tiene un impacto directo y medible.
That is the exact high-level exchange they want to see. You address the counter-argument, you use advanced structures, and you tied it right back to those three mandatory criteria.
Okay, flip it. What if I choose an Amigos del Planeta to begin with?
Then I'd use my other scripted argument. I'd say, las causas ecológicas ya reciben mucha visibilidad. Y me temo que 10,000 euros no es una cifra significativa para un problema global. Quizá deberíamos considerar salvar gatos callejeros, ya que 10,000 euros podría cubrir un año entero de esterilizaciones para una colectividad muy específica.
So now you're hitting me on the significance and visibility criteria. I'd have to push back immediately. Maybe concede one point, but pivot on another.
Mm-hmm.
I might say, aunque admito que 10,000 euros es una gota en el océano, deberíamos considerar que la relevancia para la colectividad es inmediata.
Mm-hmm.
Un planeta sin salud nos afecta a todos. Quizá no sea el aporte más significativo a nivel financiero, pero sí es el más urgente.
And that back and forth, that's the whole game. It just continues. Argument and counter-argument until the time runs out.
The key is not to get defensive.
Never. And don't revert to simple language. You're being tested on your ability to maintain your C1 command under cognitive strain. After the 4 to 6 minutes are up, the examiner will just signal that they agree or that you've reached a compromise, and the task ends.
This whole thing really shows that Tyria 3 is about strategic resilience. It's not about having the right answer.
Not at all.
So what's the best way for you, the listener, to prepare for this kind of, well, intellectual sparring match?
You just can't overstate the need for wide current knowledge. You have to be reading Spanish newspapers, magazines, blogs, all the time.
So you have opinions ready to go on a range of topics.
Exactly. You need to be able to talk about the environment, consumer rights, culture, all of it. So your vocabulary is ready and accessible. And then practice speaking, specifically focusing on how to disagree formally.
So the final takeaway for you is this. Tyria 3 is your single biggest opportunity. That 40% is for the candidates who can show that natural, sustained, sophisticated flow, all while being challenged. Nailing this part is absolutely critical for certification.
And of course, if you find you need that specific one-on-one training, maybe to build a DLE strategy or just to polish your advanced Spanish, you can always contact the instructor. It's carmenmadridonline@gmail.com or just use the contact form on deleteexam.com.
So what does this all mean? We know the examiner is literally instructed to interrupt you, to talk over you, and to contradict you. So the ultimate measure of success here isn't reaching some perfect happy agreement.
No, it's not.
It's proving that you can maintain clear, cohesive, and complex language while being actively challenged. That's what shows real mastery. So maybe the most important structure you need to master for the DLE C1, it isn't the subjunctive or the conditional. It's the ability to politely, formally, and firmly disagree. That is the real negotiation you have to win.